chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now, welcome to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Well, we know that North Carolina's metropolitan areas are growing and that the rural areas of our state are losing ground to them, population-wise at least. But for those of us who are interested in politics, what difference does all of that make? And so when I have a question like that, I turn to the expert, Farrell Gilrey, who is the director of the Program on Public Life at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Farrell, you need no introduction, but thanks again for coming to answer my questions and the ones I think all of us have.
Well, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
What are the population trends that raise a question about perhaps a different impact on politics than we're used to?
Well, North Carolina historically has been a spread out state, a state of small cities, small towns. Until the 1980s, more people living in rural areas than in metropolitan areas. And all of that has changed in the last 30 or so years. As our population has grown, as we've become one of the mega states of America in the top 10 in population, the population is aggregated in metropolitan areas, particularly the Raleigh-Durham Research Triangle area and in the Charlotte metropolitan area. I would amend slightly one of the things that you said, one of the statements you made in the introduction. Our rural areas are not declining.
Whoa. I said relative.
Relative. That's
relative.
Exactly right.
I think
relative.
I said relative. What?
Most of our rural counties have actually gained population. Of the 100 counties, 7 lost population in the last decade, but most gained. It is just that the metropolitan areas, the big counties, have accelerated the gain.
I think that's
and the distance between them is growing.
Easy, as you point out, one of those counties, not a rural county, but it's not just rural counties that have, while growing, have not grown at the rapid rate that the large metropolitan. For instance, Orange County, as you all point out, it's grown and it's grown significantly, but not as fast as Johnson or Wake or Union or some of the other fast growing counties.
That's right. And
With relative to those counties, it loses ground.
That's right. In order to gain representation in the legislature and to have a larger say in a congressional district and other kinds of districts, the metropolitan areas, particularly the major core counties, are gaining seats, whereas places like Orange County, which are growing but not growing as fast, tend to stay level with the representation they have.
Getting back to the real rural areas, these areas that have lost population or have grown very, very slow, largely in the eastern part of the state, some extent in the far mountains.
Largely in the northeast, in Congressman Butterfield's district, 5-6 of those counties have lost ground. And there's one county in the West that lost, and it escapes me right now. Which one? I guess I should have looked it up before I came in.
Graham, maybe. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure either.
Well, all right, so what? I say so what, but it startled me that I just have no idea starting out as to whether or not the growth in the metropolitan regions, and this would be primarily, I guess, Charlotte, or Mecklenburg County and surrounding areas, and Wake County and surrounding areas, and to also, what else? The Winston-Salem, Greensboro.
Why don't we walk through them?
Let me just say that this is in the background of Does this help the Democrats or the Republicans?
Yeah.
Give us the background and give us the answer.
I'm going to get to that. Let me put in the commercial first. DG and I are talking. We talked about the NC DataNet, the publication that the Program of Public Life publishes, and we explore the top 15 counties and voter turnout in the issue we released a couple of weeks ago. And
Farrell, I apologize. It's my job to give you the, not to make you do your own commercials, but I mean,
that's
you're
okay.
here because one of the things that that your program does is publish this regularly, this fantastic
I don't, on data. I don't mind the commercial. I'll be happy to do it because we've been trying to sustain these publications that we've been doing through the budget cuts.
I
want to
get
time.
Clear now. Can I give a link to it?
Yeah. Let me tell you. Just to put it bluntly, because of budget cutting and we eliminated the university eliminated state funding for the program, so we've eliminated full-time staff, and so I don't have as much assistance in updating
do it all yourself now.
Our website. So eventually, hopefully by the end of this week, it will be on www.southnow.org. Our friends at the Urban Institute at the University of North Carolina at Charlotte have it on its website. And its website, I think, is ui.uncc.edu. If you Google the Urban Institute at UNC Charlotte, you know, because it's an urban institute and they're interested in studies on the metropolitanization of North Carolina.
So your publication can be reached immediately via UNC Charlotte.
That's right.
And we'll try
That's
to have
right.
a link to that.
That's
I,
right.
I get that right.
I mean,
but quickly, in the next, by the time we get to it, it will be on your website, and we'll have a link to that.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah. I've had to wheedle some assistance, and I worked on that over the Labor Day weekend to try to get our website updated. Or you can email me at Guillory@unc.edu, and I'll be happy to email you a PDF version.
Well, that sounds great, and it's well worth going to the trouble to get to it. And to get the commercial break in, I interrupted you as where you're going in terms of giving me the background to help me and others understand exactly what these census changes mean and the growth of the metropolitan areas might mean politically in North Carolina.
Well, the two counties that have really become the real magnetic poles of the state are Wake County and Mecklenburg County. From 2000 to 2010, Wake County grew by 250,000 plus people. Mecklenburg County grew slightly less, but above 200,000, nearly 250,000. No other county in this state grew by even 100,000. So one-third of the population increase in the last decade in this state took place in Mecklenburg and in Wake counties together. And then around these strong magnetic pole counties are the suburban counties or the exurban counties, and you name some of them: Union County, Iredale, Catawba, Johnston County, Franklin,
Cabarrus.
And so these big metro areas are combinations of city, suburb, exurb, and even some patches of rural ground. The other large big metro areas is the triad, Greensboro, Winston-Salem, High Point. It's grown, but it's not grown to the extent of the other two. And so its representation is staying roughly stable. The other principal growth centers are the Wilmington area, New Hanover County, Pender County, Brunswick, and it's gained. And then the other one is in the west, the Asheville area. Asheville has been a hot town. Culturally and so it's become very much the metro hub of Western North Carolina, and And then we've had some other smaller growth centers. I've been working with the Eastern Region on some economic development thinking, and Pitt County, Greenville, has now become the state's 10th largest city. It went up three places in the last decade, and so you've got other hubs like Greenville that have begun emerging.
Well, let's take a quick break. We're visiting with Farrell Guillory. We're talking about the impact of population changes in North Carolina on the politics of North Carolina. He and I'll be right back.
Chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. Chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now back to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Farrell Guillory and I are talking about politics, but we're doing it on the basis of facts that have been compiled in a publication called DataNet. Check our website, and we'll tell you how you can get a copy on the Internet. Farrell Guillory, this is the topic of this is North Carolina's Big 15 in voter turnout. We've been talking about the top layer of the Big 15, and what is it time to pause to tell us what difference it makes that Mecklenburg, Wake, and to a certain extent some of the other metropolitan areas have grown? Or do you need to tell me more before you
well,
get to the
well,
conclusion?
Well, let me tell you what I think are the three big findings, or at least semi-big findings here. One is the metropolitan areas are growing in representation. Wake County gets two new House seats in the redistricting that the legislature just passed. Mecklenburg gets another. Many of the districts have begun tending toward these big metro areas so that they become a greater share of the whole. But our metro areas express the political division of the state. We are a narrowly divided state between Democrats and Republicans. And Democrats tend to be stronger in the urban core. Republicans tend to be stronger in the exurb suburban areas. And so our metropolitan areas would be even more powerful were they unified politically, but they are political partisan divisions within the metro areas so that they don't all speak with one voice. So these big metro areas tend to be the major battlegrounds of the state in the competition between the parties. That's first thing. Second thing is, even as we have this partisan divide, our metro areas, the counties and the metro areas, have about 20% of the voters registering unaffiliated, and they think of themselves as independent. So you've got this growing share of the electorate that doesn't place itself immediately into a Democratic or a Republican identity. So again, our politics is shaped increasingly by a large minority of voters who think of themselves as unaffiliated or independent. And then the third thing is that these metro areas are the repository, the residency of many of the newly arrived Spanish-speaking residents of our state, Latinos and others that are placed by the Census Bureau under the term Hispanic. And most of these residents are not registered to vote. Union County, for instance, the home county of former Senator Jesse Helms, you know, kind of the quintessential rural, small-town America county, you know, is now fully a suburb of Charlotte. Gained, you know, had population growth of about 70% or so in the last decade. Well, there are 20,000 plus Latinos living in Union County now, and only about 2,000 of them are registered to vote. Now, many of them haven't established residency yet, or citizenship. Some of them are young people, you know, kids, minors, but it does tell you that there is a potential growth in Latino representation in our major metropolitan areas, and not just in the core counties, but in the suburban counties too.
The I guess just to speculate a little bit, not to get to the final question of who's helped Democrats or Republicans, but with respect to the untapped voting potential of Latino or Hispanic voters, will they divide up like other residents of the metropolitan areas, or will they all be Democrats, or will they?
We don't know yet. If you're looking to the future of the two political parties in this state, that old saying, who gets there firstest with the mostest, is likely to prevail. So whether the Democratic Party mobilizes Latinos, whether the Republican Party mobilizes them, may have a large bearing on the future of the state. Currently, of course, most of the anti-immigration sentiment is centered, I think it's fair to say, in the Republican Party in this state. So I think the Democratic Party, as they're currently aligned, as the two parties are currently aligned, has the better chance of mobilizing Latinos, at least in the short term.
But before I press you more on the, you know, the bottom line in terms of who's going to be helped the most by the changes in population and growth in population in North Carolina, would you talk a little bit more? We've talked primarily about the urban, the big metropolitan areas and their associated counties, the suburban or exurban counties that are associated with them. Tell us more about the Big 15, and are the Big 15 all either Mecklenburg or Wake, or the Greensboro, High Point, Winston-Salem metropolitan area, and the associated counties, or are there others?
No, they are what you would think about. It's Mecklenburg and Wake are the two big ones, and then the triad, Guilford and Winston-Salem, and then the others that are outside of those orbits are Cumberland County, Fayetteville, Buncombe County, Asheville, New Hanover County, Wilmington. But most of the other Big 15 are what you would think of. Johnston associated with Wake, Cabarrus and Union, Gaston County associated with Mecklenburg.
All right, now, Farrell, you told us that primarily, at least as partisan, on a partisan question, these new Big 15 counties, they divide up like the rest of the state. So what then if they're growing at a more rapid pace, if they're basically going to be divided just the way the rest of the state is?
Well, it isn't so much that they're divided the way the rest of the state is, as the rest of the state is divided the way they are.
And what is that? I don't understand.
because these 15 counties accounted for 53% of the vote in 2008.
So that's a star. Sorry to interrupt you, but that's one of the star points of this DataNet report, and that is that 15 counties in North Carolina of the 100 make up more than a majority of the voters in North Carolina.
That's right.
So we don't know what that means yet, but it is something to take note
of. And so a vote in Edgecombe County or a vote in Yadkin County counts one, just as a vote in Wake County counts one. But when you put them all together, what it means is that candidates, statewide candidates, in setting a campaign strategy and setting their media buys and all of that, are naturally going to focus most of their attention where most of the votes are.
The other thing that, you know, politicians would ask, or maybe political consultants, not politicians, would ask, where are the people who can be persuaded? If I go to a rural county and I know how everybody's going to vote, then maybe I shouldn't waste my time. But are the persuadable voters more concentrated in one, either the rural
I think
areas
that's
or
my point,
areas?
Is that with 20% or more voters unaffiliated or thinking of themselves as independent in these big 15 counties, then you're going to go, you're naturally going to spend more time and resources trying to get to those persuadable voters. DG, you and I have known many splendid candidates and important public officials in this state who brag about going to all 100 counties and traveling the whole state and all of that. It's increasingly a waste of time.
You know, helps you about as much as running a marathon.
It's
good to brag about, but
And so, you know, it's hard to tell some of those smaller counties that, you know, you're not going to see candidates as often as you used to. There's a reason for it, and that's the point here is that these metro areas that we've developed as we've become this mega state are increasingly our economic engines that are driving the state. They are increasingly the cultural centers of the state, and now they are the political powers of the state. But let's face it, those other 85 counties also have 47% of the votes, so they can't be totally ignored. But when you have a finite amount of time and a finite resources as a political party or as a candidate for statewide office, you're gonna go to where you can maximize your influence and reach persuadable voters. I think there's one other thing that I need to mention.
That's good. Let's take a break.
Okay.
We're visiting with Farrell Guillory. Farrell Guillory is talking about some of the new insight that is accumulated in a publication called DataNet. We'll have a link to www.southnow.org where you can get your own copy. He and I'll be right back.
Chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. Chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now back to Who's Talking with DG Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is DG Martin, and my guest is Farrell Guillory. Farrell is the director of the program on public life.
Right.
At the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. And you're also teaching classes all the
right.
time.
Right. Yeah, I'm on the faculty of the School of Journalism and Mass Communication, and the program is within the school. And I'm appreciative of the support the school has given to the program.
Well, you get a bargain, at least as far as I'm concerned, helping us understand exactly what's happening in our state. And can I talk partisan politics with you, or just our political junkie stuff, really, as it comes out of this report? I'm thinking about it as a former candidate and one who could have learned a lot from you before. And
you should have asked.
And I'm looking at what I would do if I were a candidate based on this information that you've compiled in DataNet, and it says that more than 50% of the voters in North Carolina live in 15 counties, and I'm thinking I should go to those 15 counties. In addition, you've told me today that 20% of the voters in those particular big counties are persuadable. But here's what a candidate does, from the president all the way down. They say, okay, I'm going to Mecklenburg, I'm going to Wake, I'm going to Johnson. And what do? They go to their base, and nobody tells them how to get to the persuadable voters. How do you do that?
Well, I'd probably be in another profession if I knew exactly how to do that. Part of politics, of course, is what's known as maximizing your base, getting as many of your own supporters, people who know you or ideologically aligned or aligned with you on a partisan basis, to the polls. So it's not just a matter of getting to the persuadable voters, but it's what's gotten difficult in our politics today, of course, is that the partisan divide, the polarization that we feel in this state and nationally, makes it harder to reach the persuadable voters because they aren't as invested in the You know, and the right-wing rhetoric of a lot of the Tea Party and the Republican side are invested in some of the old arguments being fought over in the Democratic Party. They want to hear something fresh, and so it's hard or different or unconventional. So it's harder to both maximize your base and to reach the persuadables, and that's the big dilemma of American politics right now. I think one of the other things that's been happening too, DG, and this is, I think it's true nationally. I tend to look at North Carolina and the South, and I know it's true here. And that is one of the other shifts that's gone along here is that Republicans have become more successful in rural districts. They, used to be the bastion of conservative Democrats. Now Republicans are winning those older districts. And the Democratic base is increasingly in the metro areas and in the core counties. So as you look to the future, again, for the short term, and given the way the Republicans have developed the redistricting plans for Congress and for the legislature, if they survive their test in the Justice Department and in the courts, then Republicans for a while will have gained an advantage and will have taken advantage of their current majority in the legislature. But over the long term, it appears that to the extent that population is aggregating in the metro areas, that's likely to keep Democrats competitive in this state. Mm-hmm. In a way that Democrats are not as competitive in some of our more rural or slower growing sister southern states, so that Virginia, North Carolina, Florida, and perhaps Georgia, that are increasingly metropolitan states, are likely to keep the Democratic Party competitive, at least in the eastern side of the South.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I keep coming back to this figure that you gave me about 20% in the 15 top counties, uh-huh, or the 15 population-centered counties in North Carolina are persuadable voters. That is, that they're not registered either Democrat or Republican.
Yeah.
And there are other indications. Some who are registered Democrat or Republican vote independently.
But now, let's be clear. these unaffiliated voters are not all the same thing, just as Democrats and Republicans are not all the same thing. The Pew Research Center in Washington has done studies of Democrats, Republicans, and unaffiliated voters. And unaffiliated voters come in different sizes and shapes and ideologies. Some are not persuadable because they've kind of tuned out both parties and are just irascible and...
Yeah, that's the point. The point I was going to ask you about, and it's and you're making it for me, and I love that. But it is that I'm just running into more and more people who would classify themselves as unaffiliated, but they're really disaffected, angry,
and they're just
going to vote if they vote.
That's right.
And some of them really will, but they're dedicated to voting against whoever's in office.
That's right. That's right. And that benefited Republicans in 2010.
And the Democrats in...
And Democrats in 2008 and earlier in 2006, and benefited Republicans in 2004. So we have really had volatile swings in our politics.
Talk about this a little bit, but I mean, it's maybe the thing to worry about the most is that Americans... some of these 20% unaffiliated or disaffected, angry voters are tending to be the majority. So that there is you comment on this assertion that America is falling off the cliff in terms of a population that's confident that it can make a difference in political life.
Yeah, well, we're in a difficult economic time right now. The recovery from what a lot of people call the Great Recession. The recovery has not been robust. The stimulus that federal government adopted in the first year of the Obama administration. Certainly kept things from getting worse, I think most evident is, and certainly propped up state government. But the switch politically to more discussion about budget cutting, closing the deficit and all that has shifted the temper of our times, and we've got high unemployment, sustained high unemployment. It's going to take a while to work it down, and so I don't think we can divorce politics and political attitudes from the overall temperature of the country right now. And so you have a lot of voters out there voting their discontents. I don't think it's going to add up to a third party. You get whiffs even in the New York Times of, you know, columnists saying, well, maybe now's the time for a third force to emerge that, neither the Democrats nor Republicans have risen to the occasion. My own view is that the two-party system tends to be very resilient. The Republican Party has absorbed the Tea Party, and in fact,
or vice versa,
if some people would say, and clearly has exerted its force of discontent within the Republican Party, so much so that the Republican primaries are pretty much determined by the energy of the Tea Party, and so I'm not so maybe it's a paradox. It is that we've got more unaffiliated voters or people who think of themselves as not attached to the party, to either the major parties, but sooner or later they drift to one party or the other depending on the their discontents or their emotions of the moment.
We're visiting with Farrell Guillory. He and I will be right back.
Chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. Chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now back to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin, and I'm visiting with Farrell Guillory, who's my go-to expert whenever I get down and out about trying to figure out what's happening to this state or this nation politically. We're talking about it in the context of the recent publication of the North Carolina DataNet publication, and we'll have links to it. If you want to go to it right now, it's www.southnow.org for your own copy. Farrell, I was talking about current politics and the dilemma that many voters, many Americans face. But over the weekend, I was talking to a prominent North Carolinian who you'd have to put tilts Democrat, but big business, and so was persuadable and supported Republicans as well. It supported Obama and said, I'm just disappointed with Obama. Just failure, lack of leadership, just a big disappointment. And so I just let him keep on talking, and he said, but, oh my gosh, on the other side, what a bunch of jerks. Nobody you can trust. That they're Americans who've feel that way, I guess, who are disappointed with sort of where Obama has got us, but then they look at what the possibilities are on the Republican side. If you're counseling Republicans who have this magnificent opportunity to take down a sitting president, and they seem to be blowing it. What would you advise them? What would you tell them to do?
Well, the best thing that Democrats have going for them right now are Republicans. And the potential of Republicans overreaching. This is still a country with centrist tendencies, or at least in most cases. But I think there's a paradox or whatever you call it. It is one of the reasons that Republicans that Obama has not been very effective is because there hasn't been a Republican majority in the Congress in which he could negotiate very well. You know, almost all negotiations with Republicans in Congress have fallen apart. And so, yeah, he's not been effective in building the bipartisanship that he promised. But is it that he's not effective, or is there not a, you know, not a classic minority party partner to haggle with and to come to some middle ground with? And so the paradox is Republicans, by their strategy, legislative strategy, have made Obama less effective. But it's been the Republican strategy. In state politics, a similar kind of dynamic has taken hold. Republicans gained a majority in the legislature in the 2010 elections. And not only has it changed the legislature, but it's changed the nature of the governorship. You know, in the past, even when we had Republican governors or Democratic governors with one or the other, well, usually the House with a Republican majority, or when we had a co-speakership, if you recall, it was the governor who proposed and then negotiated with the legislature over a budget and over general policy. They would clash from time to time, but the governor would hold a press conference at the end of a legislative session and boast about and define what was accomplished. But now we're in a situation in which the governor is exercising or has exercised the veto power time after time, so that the nature of the governorship has changed to being a break on legislative action to function as part of the more classically as part of the separation of powers.
So let me ask you this: if you're the governor or the president, the governor of North Carolina and the president, both Democrats, both facing likely a continued majority in North Carolina and a new majority of Republicans on both houses in the Congress, that you run on defense and you say, "Okay, guys, if you want the Tea Party to push you over the cliff, vote for my opponent. But if you want somebody who will at least stand up and keep them reasonable, I'll do my best. But if you don't want these people in total charge, you just got to vote for me." I mean, can you run like that? I mean, how do you make a political speech that makes that sound?
Well, it's less. It's less incumbents running on their record, and more incumbents defining themselves by their opposition. And in contrast to the opposition, I think that's one of the, it's less clear on the national level, because it appears to me that President Obama, feels the burdens of office and didn't want to take the country, for instance, to the brink of a meltdown or a default on its debts, and he's got some foreign policy obligations. But on the state level, it's clear that Governor Perdue has decided, or maybe it's been decided for her by circumstance, that her definition of the way she's running the office of governor and defining herself for voters out there is to say, "I'm standing against what she would define as the radical reforms or the radical notions of the Republicans, that they cut too much, threw too many teachers out of a job, trying to change our Constitution, over some hot button issues." And so increasingly she is defining herself not as the governor that got things through the legislature, but acted as a break.
"I'll do my best to stop them."
That's
right.
Yeah,
that'll be an interesting. I mean, that the in North Carolina, the issue in the elections is do you want to continue this full force or do you want to put a few brakes on?
Right.
And I don't know how you find that.
And much of that is going to play out, as I've tried to indicate, within the maelstrom in the battleground of these big metropolitan areas where there are voters who are pulled and tugged by different strands of policy and politics, voters who may think of themselves as fiscally conservative, but also voters who want good schools, voters who don't want heavy debt, but also want good hospitals and good bike paths.
I haven't decided, but we have to stop. You have to come back and persuade us more. But then what insight Farrell Guillory has given us in terms of what the facts show us about upcoming political struggles. Thanks to Farrell Guillory. Thanks to all y'all for listening. It's D.G. Martin who's talking. I'll be back here before you know it.
If you want to know what's happening in our town, this is the only radio station you'll ever need. This is News Talk 1360, WCHL, Chapel Hill Carborough's News Talk and Tar Heel Station.